You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner, a book entitled True Knowledge of the Christ, made up of two 1907 cycles. I'm on the second one. This is, I'm calling this Lecture 18 in the book, even though it is in fact Lecture 3 in this second cycle on the Gospel of John, an early cycle on that book. This is Lecture 3, or Lecture 18 in the book, translated by Anna Moise, given in Basel on the 18th of November, 1907. The terms used in the Gospel of John have such depths that we will only understand the document properly and in all its parts once we have established an adequate basis for this by knowing the evolution of our planet. There is a strange agreement between the beginning of the Gospel of John and the beginning of the Bible. In the Bible we read, quote, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth," close quote. In the Gospel of John we read, quote, "In the beginning was the Word," close quote. These first words strike the basic chord for the whole of the Gospel. Earth evolution can only be rightly understood if we bring to mind that the same laws applied as in the development of the individual human being. From the spiritual scientific point of view, the planet that is visible to us is but the body of the spirit that dwells in it. This spirit goes through repeated embodiments, just as human beings do. Spiritual investigation reveals three embodiments before the earth reached its present state. This is not to say that it had not gone through further embodiments before that. But even the highest of clairvoyance is able to perceive only the three embodiments that came before and three that will follow. Together with the present embodiment, this makes seven. There is nothing superstitious about this number seven. Standing in a distant field, I see equally far in all directions. It is much the same for the clairvoyant. He too sees equally far, looking ahead in time and looking back. In occult science, these seven embodiments are called Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. The names merely refer to the states in which one and the same entity finds itself. Saturn was a state of our Earth in a far distant past. The present planet Saturn relates to the present Earth the way a child does to an old person. The Earth has once been in the Saturn state, just as the old person has once been a child. The next embodiment of the Earth also should not be taken to mean that humanity would ever walk on Jupiter. In its next embodiment, the Earth will reach the state in which the planet Jupiter is at present. Between two planetary embodiments comes a kind of heavenly or spiritual devakan, a pralaya. The time between two planetary states is no more a period of rest than the time between two lives on Earth is for human beings. It is a time of spiritual activity and preparation for the next future, the next life. Outwardly, this state appears shadowy and dim. When the Earth emerged from pralaya to enter into the Saturn state, it was not yet the way it is today. If we were able to mix up everything by way of substance and spirit that makes up Earth, Sun, and Moon, making it into a single body, we would have the Earth as it was when it emerged from that dim and shadowy condition into its Saturn state. It emerged not as a body from which all entities had gone. Even present-day humanity was present then, but in a condition adapted to the state of the planet at the time. The potential for the physical body was created on Saturn. We get an idea of the physical nature of human beings at the time if we try and grasp the material consistency of the planet. On Saturn, corporeal states of the kind we know today did not exist. There were no solids, fluids, or gases. Matter was in a state which modern physicists would not even consider to be physical or corporeal. Four states of matter are known in occult science: earth, water, air, and fire, or heat. Earth means everything that is solid. Frozen water or ice is also earth in occult science. Water is everything fluid. Molten iron or rock would thus also be water. Air is everything gaseous, including water vapor. Fire or heat is only a property of matter for modern physicists, a state where its smallest particles are in extremely rapid vibration. In occult science, heat is also matter, but much more subtle than air. When a body is heated, it takes up heat matter, according to occult science. When it cools down, it gives off heat matter. Heat matter can condense into air, this into water, this into earth. All matter did once exist as heat matter only. When the earth was in its Saturn state, only heat matter existed on it. The first beginnings of the human body also consisted only of heat matter, though some organs were already hinted at. But it was not only the germ of the physical body which was there, but also the spirit, the inmost depth of the human being, which is known as spiritual human being, or Atman. This spiritual human being rested in the womb of the Godhead, which made up the spiritual atmosphere of Saturn. This spiritual human being was no more an independent entity than our finger is. It will only gain independence by the end of the Vulcan stage. During the Sun period, which followed Saturn, the materiality and also the human bodies condensed from the heat state to the airy state. In consequence, human beings developed the ether body as well as the existing physical body, and, where the spirit was concerned, the Godhead went down a step, as it were, developing the life spirit, or buddhi. During the moon period, materiality condensed to fluid, and we might compare the densest form of matter there to wax, as far as consistency is concerned. Human beings also continued to evolve, on the one hand developing the astral body, and on the other, on the spiritual side, the spirit self, or manas. Human beings of that time did not yet have an I capital. They may be compared to the animals of today, though different in appearance. When the earth emerged from the rest period that had followed the moon phase, entering into the present period of evolution, the matter and entities in it were everything that makes up the present sun, earth, and moon. In material terms, humanity had been refined to the point where the astral body was able to take in the eye, developing into a vehicle for the eye. On the other hand, the spirit had condensed so that, rather like a drop of water, it was able, as an eye, to fertilize the lower bodies. The first significant cosmic event was the separation of the sun from the earth. This was necessary, so that the higher spirits, which until then had been connected with humanity, and were now ready for higher functions, would have the kind of arena they needed. These higher spirits had reached the human level of development at the Saturn stage. They had then been at the stage of evolution which human beings will reach only in the Earth's distant Vulcan period. Other higher spirits had, during the Earth's sun stage, reached the degree of evolution to which humanity will attain in the Venus period. These particular spirits are the ones which now send their powers to us with the physical light of the sun. Both types of spirits separated from the Earth, taking the most refined powers and substances with them to create the present sun. Those were miserable times when the sun had left the Earth, but the moon continued to be part of it. Human beings were in danger of giving themselves up wholly to form, with all things spiritual, all potential for development, dying away. Together, sun and earth would have caused humanity to develop so rapidly on the spiritual side that they would not have been capable of physical development. If the moon powers had continued to be connected with the earth forces, all life would have been frozen in sheer form. Human beings would have turned into statues, quote, crystallized humanity, close quote, as Goethe put it in Faust II. Separation of sun and moon from the earth established the balance between life and form that was needed for human evolution. It is only with those powers now acting on humanity from outside that human beings were able to evolve in the right way. The powers coming from the sun create and fructify life. The powers that cast this life in solid forms come from the moon. We are indebted to the moon for the development of the physical body as it is today, but the life which comes down into this body is from the sun. These two streams, from sun and moon, are always acting in the right way because one of the sun spirits has connected with the moon. The spirits that were at the level of gods had departed with the sun. One of them has, however, gone its own way, making the present moon its dwelling place. This spirit is called Jehovah or Yahweh, the God of form, or the moon deity. Jehovah or Yahweh shaped the three bodies of human beings in such a way that they were able to take in the eye droplet. Jehovah made the human body in his own image, quote, so God created man in his own image, close quote, Genesis 1:27. This was the theory of evolution taught in mystery schools through the ages. In the Christian school of Dionysius the Areopagite, disciples would hear something like this, quote, consider the realms of life forms on earth. You see stones, they are dumb. They do not express pain or pleasure. See the plants, they are dumb too, not expressing pleasure or pain. The animals have risen above the dumbness. Close quote. If you were to follow evolution with an eye, EYE, sharpened by the spirit, you would see that the same quality came to expression in the sounds produced by animals in a far distant past, as also sounds through the whole cosmos. The more you move up toward the human being, the more will you find that sound expresses individual pain and individual pleasure. Only man has succeeded in putting something that comes from the individual spirit into sounds. Animals roar out what is happening in nature, but sound became word when Yahweh had formed human bodies so that the sun's spirits were able to enter into them. When sound becomes word, the spirit sounds into the astral body. Meaning and significance came into sound when the higher sun powers entered into the forms created by Yahweh. When the first word sounded in man, this marked man's actual beginning as a spirit. We have now come to the point which the evangelist touched on in chapter 1, verse 1, quote, "In the beginning was the Word," close quote. The most sublime spirit, connected with the Son, who sent the eyes down to earth, is called the Christ in occult terms. The eyes, capital, as members of the Son Logos, did, however, only flow gradually into the forms. The light streamed out from the Son Logos, but in those times only a few accepted it. Those who did accept it came to be different from others. They were called the children, or the sons of God, chapter 1, verse 12. They were made up of four principles: physical body, ether body, astral body, and eye, though the fourth, the youngest of them, was still weak and dark. The light is to come to all humanity, but it needs time to do so. Reference is made to this in verses 8 to 14. Individual people had already taken in the light to a high degree, and therefore knew of it and were able to bear witness. They taught others. Those who bore witness from personal experience and not from being taught, telling people that the one would come who would for the first time bring the light to all, were called, in quotes, John, in occult teaching, chapters 6 and 7. The writer of the Gospel of John was one such, in quotes, John. In verse 18 of chapter 1 we read, quote, "No one has ever had sight of God," close quote, which means no one before John, for it was only with Christ, Jesus, that he became personified. The greatest event for the evolution of the cosmos and of humanity was the event on Golgotha. The end of Lecture 3, again, which is also Lecture 18, as apportioned in this book.